With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Pack up your belongings, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy the News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White. I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined by returning guest Jeremy Bent and newcomer Diana McCorry. Hello, Jeremy and Diana.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
We're glad to be here.
This is
my
Price is Right voice.
I love it.
Your Rod Roddy voice.
Yeah, that's what's happening right now. Yeah, so thanks for coming out.
We a great pleasure to be here.
I mean, full disclosure, we've had a bunch of Cheesecake Factory.
That's true, yeah. So, I managed to talk everyone into that.
We survived a Cheesecake Factory fire drill, didn't mobilize anyone at Cheesecake Factory.
No.
By drill, you mean an alarm going
off,
and everyone kind of being like, meh.
Everyone's like, we've just had 2,000 calories of pasta, so we'll just wait until the fire hits us, and then we'll move.
We'll just see.
Yeah, and that plan worked out.
Yeah,
we're all good.
We were all fine.
We were all fine. I'm just not going to get the Asian food at Cheesecake Factory, I think.
I don't think it's their strength.
No, and I will never get a salad at Cheesecake Factory again. This was my second attempt at a Cheesecake Factory salad.
Sheesh.
Not good.
But this week on the show, we are traveling to November 3rd, 1996. Mm. Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo plus Juliet, ruled the box office.
Sure.
No Diggity Bosley. By Blackstreet topped the charts.
Oh, great song.
So good.
And Fox aired The Simpsons episode, You Only Move Twice. Jeremy and Diana, you must have seen You Only Move Twice before today.
Yeah, yes. I might have seen it when it aired. Because I would have been 13 years old, about to turn 14 in just a few short weeks. And so I would have been a Simpsons fan at that point.
Mm.
So probably I was well prepared to watch that episode.
Yeah, I probably saw it too. I was watching it pretty religiously as a kid. I was 8, I guess.
1996,
Yeah.
I have never seen it before today because, as I've talked about, I think sporadically, this is a show that I was not allowed to watch as a child.
I think my parents were not fans of The Simpsons because they had sort of heard it was like
vulgar. Bad.
Yeah. And then I think my dad sat down and watched an episode with us and he's like, I think my dad is where I get a lot of my sense of humor. And I think my dad thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And so I think he's like, they can watch The Simpsons. It's okay. And so then we were allowed to do it.
Let's talk about this, The Simpsons panic. I feel like there was, what I remember about The Simpsons, because I feel like most of my Simpsons memories as a child are from, like, the first 2 years it was on air.
That's when the panic was there.
Yeah, because, so it debuted in 89?
Yeah, 89.
So, I mean, around that time I was 4 or 5, and the notion of a primetime cartoon, not new, because the 60s had the Jetsons and the Flintstones,
sure,
so, like, we had those, but it had been a long time, and also those shows did not curse, use the curse words.
I mean, it's like, you look at what The Simpsons did, and it's so tame to compare to what's on TV today.
Yeah, I was born later, so my childhood had the South Park panic.
Yeah.
South Park is
so much worse.
Heavier.
Pretty dirty.
Infant. The first episode has, like, Cartman getting probed up the ass by an alien.
Right.
Like, you watch...
They're, like, starving children from Africa getting, like, eaten and infected with AIDS.
It's really horrible.
Yeah.
It's like, Simpsons says the word hell.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, I remember, because what I also remember is when the Do the Bartman came out, that was a big deal. And that has the line, like, and Lisa's always playing that damn saxophone.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember...
Damn.
As a child, I heard that and I sang that lyric, and my sister, who was like babysitting me, had to like,
this is a problem.
You can't say that word. So that's like, wow. So it was just not welcome in my house. But I remember later on when I was in college, I took a history of sitcom class and we watched the pilot, and I was like, the first episode, it's like, this is not scary.
No.
Like literally, yeah, like, I mean, it's not. Because
the pilot is them getting Santa's Little Helper.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
And it's actually like a very sentimental, sweet show with very sort of traditional family values.
My aunt and uncle are pretty religious, and they had, like, I have four cousins from that aunt and uncle, and they're all younger than me, and they were visiting when I was like 15 or 16, and I was watching The Simpsons as a rerun, and I sort of expected my uncle to be like, oh, we don't watch The Simpsons, but he's like, you know, it's actually a pretty, like, there's like a good message at the end of the show, which is true a lot of the time in The Simpsons. Because I think the episode is the one where Bart shoplifts.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Bone Storm, which is a very good episode.
And a very moralistic episode. Yeah.
But like more often than not, there's a strong message there.
Yeah. So I wasn't allowed to watch it. But then when I got to high school, the fact that I grew up and did not watch it, and like no one in my family watched it. So like I didn't know what I was going to say. No one. Yeah. And it wasn't even a part of our lives. But when I got to high school and then everyone in college, when people found out that I never watched The Simpsons... The thing to make me not do a thing is to be like, you've never seen it.
Yeah.
You have to.
We're going to sit down and watch it right now.
And everyone, and it was like, saying you've never watched The Simpsons elicits a different, like a more intense response than almost most ever. Like, or at least it did 10 years ago. Like, you would, the amount of pressure I got from people just made me recoil fiercely. Like, I will never watch it because none of you will shut up about this.
I'll go to hell.
And it isn't until, like, with my husband loves it and grew up with it, and we together watched. Like, I've now seen, like, most of the first, like, the first 10 Treehouse of Horror and, like, Christmas episodes as part of my annual watching of holiday episodes. Yeah.
Their episodes are good.
Choice.
Yeah.
They do good work there.
For sure.
So yeah, it's weird to think about how controversial it was, for just being a sitcom.
And it was just...
And it's a cartoon for adults. Yeah. Were there any cartoons for adults before The Simpsons? I don't know.
Not on network television.
Well, I mean, there were, like, Flintstones and Jetsons were, but... But it's also because, like, the live-action sitcoms they were airing next to were equally juvenile in a way.
Okay.
Like, nothing was breaking any barrier. But I mean, like, Wilma got pregnant on the Flintstones and, like, had a kid. Like, you know, that was... So that was probably controversial back then, but like, it's firmly Saturday morning fare for all of us.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, I think, what Simpsons is kind of now.
Yeah, I mean, because I was born a little later than you guys, I didn't even know it was controversial growing up. It was a family activity in my house. Like, I was saying before, my earliest memory, like, of my entire life... is my mom trying to convince me that it was time to get in the bath. And I was like, but what time does The Simpsons come on? What am I missing?
I think by 96, the fervor had kind of died down. And, like, the people who liked The Simpsons were like, hey, it's just a good show. And the people who didn't like it were like, well, we're never going to watch it.
There was also, I also remember, like, larger than The Simpsons panic, there was the Fox panic.
Yeah, Fox in general was like, that was their whole thing of like, we're pushing the borders.
Yeah.
You know,
like, because at that time it was like Tracy Ullman's show, Married with Children.
I was not allowed to watch Married with Children.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Which, admittedly, like, I watch now, and it's like, it's so over the top and dumb. Like, but again, still kind of pales in comparison to what's on TV now.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
But like, I don't know. I get why they didn't want me to watch that, because there's a lot of, like, sex stuff in that. Like, it's way worse than The Simpsons.
Oh, right, yeah. But they all got lumped together. And I think it's just because The Simpsons was... I think there was, like, this weird...
I think they aired... They might have been back-to-back, or maybe close on, to, like, on Sunday.
It seemed like Sunday nights was their big thing. It is just... It's interesting to think, like, this is a cartoon. Your kids are going to want to watch this. No. Like, this seems like a Sunday morning, like, your pastor in church like,
right.
The kids are going to want to watch this show.
Don't beware.
They might say, da damn, and hell.
And hell, yeah.
Right. Ooh, lordy. So, yeah, let's get into...
And eat my shorts.
This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're going to be talking about The Simpsons episode You Only Move Twice. It is the second episode of Season 8 and was written by John Swartzwelder and directed by Mike B. Anderson. Here's how iTunes describes the episode. Homer gets a new job and the family moves, only to find out his new employer is an evil millionaire intent on ruling the world. How accurate is that description?
That's pretty spot on.
It is, but I think it's misleading in that the like evil millionaire thing is very much a background.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't affect Homer at all.
Yeah. The fun part about this episode is that you don't realize he's working for a Bond villain until like 15 minutes into the episode.
It's like end of Act 2 or yeah. It's very late. Yeah.
And
it doesn't affect the plot at all.
I was really, if you just listened to an audio recording of this, and like you wouldn't, if you just like read the script,
you would
without
hear some
any
weird
stage
gunfire.
Direction, you would not know.
you would know because of the Bond stand-in at one point. That's where they make it pretty clear.
Yeah.
But if you took that scene out, I don't know that you would know.
and that scene would be really confusing. Because
right.
The rest of it, like, it never gets addressed again.
Except, yeah.
I mean, there's that UN scene.
There's the UN.
I want to take a risk.
You never want to take the chance. I want to take the chance.
So the episode opens with, we got to talk about that theme song.
Danny Elfman
classic theme song.
Yeah.
It's a theme
Beautiful.
Song. Even though I don't have any memories of The Simpsons as a child, I have a memory of the opening credits. Like,
yeah.
Almost like shot for shot.
Of course.
Yeah. Like Homer running from the car as it comes through the garage.
I mean, that's such a well-worn credit sequence that people have been watching at this point for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, that's just in the national consciousness.
Do they reanimate it every now and then?
When they changed to HD, they reanimated the whole thing. A, so it looked better.
Yeah.
And B, so it was actually in HD and they put a lot more like characters and details into it. But then also in the last few seasons, they've been having like guest animators come in and redo the whole thing.
Oh.
Like Don Hertzfeldt has done one that is insane.
Is it still follow the same structure? Like, it's them, like, march at the grocery and...
The Don Hertzfeldt one is just nuts.
Rick must have been so excited, though.
Yeah, it's clear that it comes from a deep love of The Simpsons. They did a Rick and Morty one that is very weird and gross.
Ooh.
No one talks about these. All right,
yeah,
I haven't heard...
No one talks about The Simpsons
at
all.
Like, these are the things that the people that are not talking about the episodes. It's like, oh, cool, like, Rick and Morty's on The Simpsons. Like, that's the...
I want to point out there's so many firsts going on right now. First of all, this is the first time we've ever talked about an animated show on Must Have Seen TV. Second of all, this is the first time we were talking about a show that is still on the air.
Mm.
That is actually airing new episodes, like, tonight.
It's like, how many comedy shows have lasted for 30 years?
No, because, I mean, it's only, like, animation is why this can go on for so long.
Yeah.
I feel like the longest live-action sitcom, I mean, Cheers was on for 11 years.
That's a long time.
Oh, Big Bang will probably outlast it, because I think it might go to, like, 12 or something. And It's Always Sunny has gotten greenlit for, like, seasons 13. But their seasons are half as long,
right.
So it's not really the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's still on. Theme song is super iconic. There are the two rotating jokes that are changing every episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is Bart at the chalkboard,
yeah.
and this one is, I did not learn everything I need to know in kindergarten.
It's a decent one.
Yeah.
That's like, that was a popular book at the time, right?
Oh, right.
Oh, you guys know? Oh.
No, is that a...
So there was a best-selling book where it was like, everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten.
Oh.
And it, you know, and the book, it's one of those books that's like, be kind and share, and it's like,
okay.
That's all great, but like, that's not useful life advice, you know?
Yeah, don't be an asshole.
Right. Also, somebody needed to learn advanced math to build everything
it's
that
like,
we have.
Well, not every, it's like, well, if we...
You need to learn some English in order to write this book. That
right.
You're
I was like... You can't learn how to be a doctor in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So we agree with Mrs. Kerbopple making Bart write that on the chalkboard.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, and that's Marsha Wallace's character, right?
Yeah.
Who I also... Marsha Wallace from the Bob Newhart Show, who I love.
Mrs. Kerbopple
also
is
Match Game.
One of the best characters.
Simpsons extended,
I need to watch that
you
for
would
her.
There are
her.
All of the Edna Kerbopple episodes are so good, particularly the one... where Bart stays after school, you know, gets detention and sees that she's sad and, like, writes a fake response to her personal ad.
God, right.
That episode is really good.
Aww.
It's very, very good.
I love that she had that, like, late career, or that became, like, her main... Well, not even late career, like, that's
the 15 years.
Right.
Yeah.
She, life.
Yeah.
Like, a long time.
Yeah, because she did Bob Newhart Match Game in the 70s, which is where I love her from.
Yeah, so, of course.
She's not in this episode.
No, no sorry.
I just wanted to talk about it. I just want to talk about her.
We're allowed to talk about a great Simpsons character.
Yes. and then the other rotating joke is the couch gag, the sofa gag. Do they say couch or sofa gag?
Couch gag is the preferred nomenclature by Simpsons fans.
So this, the couch gag here is them parachuting in and Homer then splatting because it's been open.
Solid visual gag, timed very well.
Mm-hmm. So then, I'm trying to think of how to tackle talking about this, because Simpsons is the densest show, joke-wise.
Yeah.
Very.
It's exhausting, Simpsons.
Because I feel like the plot of it, we've already kind of talked, like, they move to a different place because Globex recruits him, and then it doesn't, like, his rest of his family is miserable, so they move back.
Yeah.
The plot is very, it's not a complicated thing.
This episode is much more of a showcase for Albert Brooks' character.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Who has been voted like
the best guest star
of all time, because he is so good, and he's also guested multiple times as multiple characters.
Who else?
He's the isn't he the new age, like, be like the boy? Isn't that Albert Brooks?
Oh, probably. No.
He apparently ad-libbed most of his lines.
So I hear.
All of his lines.
And that's wonderful.
Does not surprise
me.
Because many of them have a strongly Albert Brooks quality to them.
Absolutely. Excuse me, I'm in the middle of a fun run.
He plays Hank Scorpion, but he's Scorpio. But Homer calls him Scorpion?
Mr. Scorpion.
Homer just doesn't know what his last name is.
Homer, don't call me Scorpion because it's
Mr. Scorpion. Don't call me that either.
So I thought it was very interesting how he is the exact same kind of... that character is 100% still relevant today. Like, that's a Google bot.
Like, friendly boss, yeah.
That is a, like...
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was really... It shocked me to think about how accurate... If you just switch out Doomsday Device with Search Engine or, like, Hot App, that work environment, the amenities that they give everyone, the way that he, like, wears moccasins and does fun runs. And,
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't want you to think of him as his boss.
Yeah.
And even, like, the planned community of Cypress Creek is very, like, that's very, sort of Silicon Valley, sort of like, it's like a...
Right, only now they're building, like, dormitory-style living in San Francisco for...
So he gets, the episode opens with the Globex car, like, recruiters just driving down the street and just...
trying to draw Smithers in.
And is Smithers gay?
Yeah.
Okay, see, there's...
Very much.
That was a sort of, like, open secret for many years, and then they've made it very explicit.
Yeah.
Oh, when did they make it explicit? Is that more recent?
There are some explicit references to it in the early seasons. I'm trying to think of a...
So he has, like, he, like, loves Mr. Burns.
He has a lot of fantasies about Mr. Burns. But there's one where Smithers goes on vacation and Homer takes over for him.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point he calls the office to make sure everything's going okay. And it's very obvious that he's at a gay bar.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, all guys and they're doing, like, a big conga line. And it's, like, it's pretty clear that, like, he has gone on vacation and has just gone to, like...
On a gay cruise.
Yeah, or something like that.
A dream.
Yeah.
So he says no. Character. He says no. What was his reasoning? Just because he, like...
Oh, he loves his job.
He's spoken for... Oh, he loves working for Mr. Burns. Spoken for him,
exactly. So they decided to go to the third person in charge.
Yes.
Well, so the third most senior person at the company, who just... It just means he's been there the longest.
Yeah,
because, Mr. Burns is constantly forgetting Homer's name, so I think he's just, like, getting a paycheck without anyone even realizing he's doing anything.
As an update, Albert Brooks did play Brad Goodman, who is the sort of, like, self-help guru who encourages everyone in Springfield to act like Bart. But he also played Jacques, the bowling instructor.
Oh, my God.
Who makes a move on Marge.
Right. When Marge gets really good at bowling. And I love her outfit.
No, because Homer buys Marge a bowling ball for her birthday that says Homer on it. Because it's clear that he bought a gift for himself.
Oh, basically.
And she's no, I'm going to learn to bowl.
And she does.
And she does.
And she gets
And she does get very good.
And she has the coolest outfit she ever gets, I think, in that episode.
She does have a cool episode.
Because poor Marge, that poor dress.
That tired, not
flattering.
Yeah.
So she does get to wear a different outfit in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Only moved twice.
They get to... So Homer gets recruited. He takes the job without telling anyone. And he
they cut from the limo of them being like, well, I guess we'll have to approach the next... And then it's just Homer being like, I got a new job.
Also, they don't bother to sell their house. It's abandoned.
Yeah, they just, like, go out because they can't sell
it. They do try, but they can't.
Right.
I like Marge says, like, she's an...
Homer, I don't want to leave Springfield. I've dug myself into a happy little rut here, and I'm not about to hoist myself out of it.
That's such a Marge line.
They watch, like, Homer gives them the Cypress Creek, like, brochure video. And I love that it's just, it's a derelict, like, wasteland. And then all of a sudden, all these, like, coffee shops drop, and everything turns to coffee, except for a homeless man who turns into a mailbox.
That is one of my all-time... favorite Simpsons sort of like, you can tell that's just Hank Azaria having a ball of like,
what's this?
Look at this place.
Somebody ought to build a town that works. Somebody did.
It's so good. And so then they like pack up after they like cordon off the house, like it's abandoned, just forget it. Then we have like this goodbye montage.
Every character in all of Springfield.
Must have cost so much in animation to animate every single side character saying goodbye for no reason.
Really bringing in those voice actors to also just say goodbye.
The difference with The Simpsons is like all those people are already there.
Yeah. Right.
That's like, once you have Hank Azaria in there, you have 10 characters.
And
once you
have
Harry Shearer in there, you've got all the other characters. You know, it's like, and Dan Castellaneta. Like, those three guys voice, like, 80% of the characters on The Simpsons.
And Phil Hartman is still alive at this point. 96?
Yes, 96? Yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah, so...
But they didn't... Lionel Hutz.
They do make a reference to Lionel Hutz. They say, we can't leave Springfield. Bart's lawyer is here.
So, no... Yes. No visual... Either Troy McClure or Lionel Hutz, but
right.
So when they're driving out, that's when Homer says, "So
so long, stink town."
That is originated. That's this reference,
I believe so.
Yes. Because our friend Kirk D'Amato, who you will remember from episode, I think 2 of this podcast, the Dick Van Dyke episode. That's what he says literally every time he leaves
any town.
Any town
when he leaves. He lives in L.A. When he leaves L.A. to come here, he'll say, so long, stink town. And then when he leaves New York to go back to L.A., he'll also say, so long, stink
town. Or on vacation, or just driving through a place. And I've just been seeing that phrase for, I don't know, 5-6 years on Facebook posts and tweets, like...
Now you know.
All the time. And so when it happened here, I was like, is this the originator?
It is.
The original stink town.
He's quoting this specific episode.
I believe so.
Wow.
This, I will say... Brett was not well-versed in Simpsons episodes, so we recommended a few episodes. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like, this is my favorite episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah, it might be my favorite, too.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Is it all just, like, the Bond stuff? Or just, like, the... Is there a better joke density in this one?
I do love Hank Scorpio.
Yeah, he's, I think, definitely my favorite... But there's so many good jokes.
I also think every member of the Simpson clan has a fun B story.
Yeah.
I will say that I think Marge is probably the most frequently underserved character.
Yeah.
She gets the least to do. And her B story is a little weak.
It's a little weak, but it has such a funny button.
Yeah, the payoff is great. Like where you think she's becoming this alcoholic. And then she's like...
I've been so bored since we moved here. I found myself drinking a glass of wine every day. I know doctors say you should drink a glass and a half, but I just can't drink that much.
So all their different stories is like, so Homer is going to work and he's now in charge and the people are like listening to him and he's like having a good time. Then back at home, Marge, their house basically cleans itself. The plants water themselves. The oven cleans itself. Her chores are done by 9:30, and so she drinks a glass of wine every day.
Right.
Yeah.
Maggie is stuck in a swing-a-jig, which was terrifying.
That is truly
the only thing
horrible.
We see of her, and she's reaching, trying to get
just like, turn it off.
It was so upsetting. Lisa has like. Another, like, her plot line is, like, smaller. She's, like, out in, like, nature. She's loving it.
Well, they have to do, like, 3 B stories for
each one.
Yeah, it's
a lot.
Yeah.
It's kind of a lot.
And so hers is just, she's literally allergic to the town.
Right. Sort of checks out for most book kids I know.
Yeah. She wants to be a part of nature. She wants to experience the world, but
no. The squirrel wants to blow the...
Blow that dandelion right in your face. Addictive little northern reticulated chipmunk. Yeah.
And then Bart has the most substantial storyline.
But also, fits with what we know of Bart.
Yeah. Right. Where he goes and it's like first day of school and the teacher writes a cursive sentence on the chalkboard.
And he never learned cursive.
And he can't read it. It's very embarrassing and sad. And then he tries to get out of it by doing an armpit fart. And then no one's like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
And then they put him in the remedial classroom and it's like, it's very sad.
The first moment of that remedial classroom, though, is hilarious because they're all looking at him with these evil remedial class faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like that, though, because it is actually, because that happens in schools. Bart's not stupid.
He's not stupid. He's really smart. He's just really badly behaved, and it's not his fault that he went to a shitty public school.
Well, in that episode where Bart, if he fails, is going to have to repeat the fourth grade.
Right.
It's he has a learning disability, you know?
Right.
He's sort of ADD. When he tries to read, it's just hard for him to do.
To focus.
But he's not stupid.
Right.
But
come up with that many catchphrases? Are you kidding me? Gotta be witty.
And Bart has very high, social intelligence.
Yeah.
Which is how he sort of grifts people. But, he's not dumb. And I think that sort of stuff happens a lot in schools where it's we just don't have time to get this kid up to the level of the rest of the class. Yeah, so just put him in there.
Which is what that line is about when he's like, wait, so
Let me get this straight. We're behind the rest of our class and we're going to catch up to them by going slower than they are? Cuckoo.
He's like, here's the letter A.
Right. He's like, no.
And I like that what the teacher says,
lady, I'm supposed to be in the fourth grade.
Sounds to me like someone's got a case of the sposedas.
That's when next up is where we actually get to the James Bondness, Bondness of it all.
Bond, right.
Because that's when Homer walks in on him doing, he's looking for sugar.
He goes in to ask about hammocks.
Right.
And that's when he's got the link to the UN.
Right.
And that's totally an improvised, Albert Brooks is improvising.
I'm sure.
That hammocks, the name of all those hammock stores and how they're all on 3rd Street.
Oh my God, that's for
ultimately
sure.
All
put your butt
the
there.
Put your butt there.
Sir, I need to know where I can get some business hammocks.
Hammocks? My goodness, what an idea. Why didn't I think of that? Hammocks! Homer, there's 4 places. There's the Hammock Hut. That's on 3rd.
Uh-huh.
There's Hammocks or Us.
That's
on 3rd, too. You got Put Your Butt There.
Mm-hmm.
That's on 3rd.
Yeah.
Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Right.
Matter of fact, they're all in the same complex. It's the Hammock Complex down on 3rd.
Oh, the Hammock District.
That's right.
Which is probably just him and Dan Castellaneta going back and forth.
Yeah.
It's like, that's so good.
I love it.
There's actually a big, there was a big internet, I don't want to say controversy, but sort of, there were multiple articles written about that joke he makes when he meets them for the first time and shows them his moccasins.
Yeah.
He goes, you like them?
Look at my feet.
Okay.
You like those moccasins? Look in your closet. There's a pair for you. Don't like them? Then neither do I. Get the hell out of here. Ha! Ever see a guy say goodbye to a shoe?
Yes, once.
And there was a controversy over, is Homer talking about a previous incident where he saw someone say goodbye to their shoes? Or just now, when Hank Scorpio said goodbye to his own shoes?
It's definitely just now.
Oh, right?
No, see, I've always thought it was a previous incident.
No, absolutely not.
My instinct was it was a joke about how he'd seen it before.
That's what I thought.
Really?
Yeah, because that's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
And so they asked, there was this whole article, and they found the writer of this episode is like, what was your idea? And they're like, oh, he's like, I did not write that joke. That was completely not memorizing. And so then they tracked down Dan Castellaneta and were like, when you said
that. 20 years ago.
I don't remember 100%, but I think he says what Brett and I are saying of I think I was thinking that Homer had seen someone say goodbye to their shoes before, but the other version, he's like, but now that you're saying that, I think that's much funnier. And he couldn't decide. Either way, it's a great joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good moment.
So he, when does he walk? Is the next time when he walks in looking for sugar?
That is it.
Yeah.
Is he the UN thing? Or did we already
The UN thing is with the hammocks.
Yes.
And then later,
is the actual sugar. Because he walks in an underground volcano layer.
Yeah.
And they have Mr. Bont tied up to the table and with the laser.
The laser about to slice his crotch open, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And Homer tackles him and shoot the fuck out of him off screen.
Yeah. Right. It's off screen, but they like
it's
he's
still
dead.
Pretty jarring.
Yeah, it's the button of that scene is like right before it cuts to the next thing, is like all of them like
four guards like, just like wailing.
Yeah, like she's that's what I want to say. Like the fact that this is animated means that it can it obviously means it can do so much more. Like the visuals, most of the jokes in this are visual.
There's a lot of great visual gags in this episode.
Especially in the next and like when Homer is quitting, because in the background is just army men and spies and soldiers
the
all
climax
fighting.
Of a Bond movie going on in the
behind
background.
Behind them while Homer and him are having like a normal conversation about like you should really do what's best for your family. Like
Well, and Hank has a like a flamethrower in his hand. Yeah, it's
there's
amazing.
This is sort of what my uncle was talking about, where he's like, you know, it's a funny show, but there's always like a message, and like the message of this episode is like
Homer, should do what's right for your family.
Homer cares about the well-being of the Simpson family more than he cares
about
like,
himself
having a good life for himself.
Yeah.
And that's a nice message, right? Yeah. That a dad cares a lot about his family.
Right, because he's having a blast.
Well, he loves it.
It's like there's more important than money. Like, money can't buy every... Although, like, hey, I would love to find out the problems that a lot of money come with a lot of money.
Yeah.
Lord knows.
I feel like we could figure him out.
It seems like, couldn't he just hire Bart a tutor? Something.
With all the money he's making.
Get Lisa some Claritin.
And
Marge should go back to school.
Well, yeah,
that would be great.
I think what would happen, because this is a show that was on, you know, this episode was on over 20 years ago. And so, like, this is before DVR exists. This is before, even if, like, you have an audience that is a fan of your show, you can't expect them to have seen every single episode of your show. But I think if this show was written now, they would call back to a previous season, and Marge would be like, oh, I got all this free time. I'm going to start painting again.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a pretty central characteristic of Marge. Like, she was, like, a good painter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I think you could have the exact same storyline where it's like, oh, Marge is, like, she's painting again. And then it turns out, like, the, like, amateur artist community in Cypress Creek is like
insufferable.
Not insufferable, but so good. She's like, I gotta go, right?
Because that's the thing that I want. Like, the cool thing about Bob's Burgers, which is honestly so similar to The Simpsons. But, like, they do have there's a shared sense of history, like,
they trade the more fantastical elements of The Simpsons, where, like, you know, we're like, you can't have a Bond villain in Bob's Burgers that's like a little
too big
for that world.
They have like Mr. Fish Odor, who's
but they have a lower scale.
Right. They have that Christmas episode where Mr. Fish Odor and all of his other rich people friends make gingerbread houses in the basement.
That
ends with like a Russian roulette game, like kind of shit. And it's not fantastical, it's just like creepy.
Yeah. Right. And like, they're willing to do everything on a slightly smaller scale, but I still think it's the same vibe as The Simpsons, where like kooky fun. But then, like, usually a message about family or being kind or something like that.
Because it would be interesting to have seen, you know, maybe an arc. Like, an arc in this new town.
Like a three episode.
Yeah. Which I feel like a show like Archer, like, now does. Like, here's a whole season where we are now in this we're throwing out all the old painted, like, background set. Because on animation, that is hard to do.
Yeah.
Where you, like, scrap everything we've been using.
To me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be interesting. Even if he, like, if he did send his family home and tried to commute or something, and then he saw much less of them or something and sort of fell out of touch.
Hang
out with Hank more, and they could go bowling. And
in real life, if it was like, well, the actor playing Homer Simpson has gone to do a movie, so we've given him this new job. So now, like, for the next movie, like if it was a live action show.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happens with John Goodman in the last season of Roseanne, I think he was shooting. My assumption is he was shooting Big Lebowski during the last season.
Probably. That times out, I think.
Because when he comes back, he has like a goatee.
He
probably. Right. And he's missing from like 9 of those episodes.
Well, he made the right decision.
100%. I do like the musical chairs scene. It's just like a little interstitial where like they're playing musical Bart and all the kids are playing musical chairs. And there's, like, what, 8 kids and, like, 12 chairs.
And Bart doesn't even sit down.
It's
such a great example of, like, Bart is smart enough to know that he's like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, it's awful.
Just
teach that kid. Get a tutor. Have him learn cursive. He'll be fine.
Yeah. And so, like, the episode ends with them finally, like, just going back to their abandoned house. Who was the guy that's squatting in there?
That's Otto, who is the school bus driver.
Yes. Right, yes, okay.
With his absent girlfriend, Crystal.
Is that a running character?
No.
Or do we think that he's making it up?
Like, no, I think she's there. He's
sort of a known burnout on the show, and is like... he's used a lot to be like, oh man, like,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, he was impressed that the house had windows.
Yeah, like, that's the kind of gag that they use Otto for a lot.
Yeah,
he's great.
And when they get there, like, Homer's whole dream the entire time was having the money to own the Dallas Cowboys. Which is a very 1996.
Yeah, for real.
Because that was their heyday.
That's like Troy Aikman.
Yes. Kinda, even my family liked the Dallas Cowboys, and they didn't. My family did not care about the NFL. We were all about college football. I say everyone else in my family, except for me. Every Saturday,
The TV podcast.
Yeah, every Saturday, I was upstairs just waiting for the football game to be over so we could, like, just do anything while they were down there yelling at the TV.
Oh, fun.
So that's why I'm here now, because I was upstairs watching television.
Yep.
Looney Tunes in the afternoon.
Oh, man.
And Wienerville.
Wienerville.
Remember Wienerville on Nickelodeon?
Well, I didn't have cable for most of my childhood.
Okay, I don't remember Wienerville.
It's Mark Wiener's. It was a show that used a lot of the puppets that are a head and then, like, a little tiny, like, plastic body.
Oh,
you, like,
God.
Stick your head through a thing, and then
that.
You, like, do the
really
thing.
That
sounds terrifying.
It was 90% that, and then they would show, like, really stupid cartoons that I hated watching. Mm. Did not like that show, but I watched it every week.
Yeah, you really had a commitment to it.
Yeah, because, like, literally, what else was I going to do?
Yeah, were you going to watch football?
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Hell no.
I'll take these weird puppets and tiny bodies,
if it's on Nickelodeon, it must be good. I'll watch this episode of My Brother and Me for the 100th time, because there were only 13, but they would run it for an hour every Saturday and Sunday for years. Anyway, so they won't give him the Dallas Cowboys.
No.
And so, but they do give him, or Hank gives him the
Denver Broncos.
So, but those fortunes have flipped, correct?
I was going to say, now owning the Denver Broncos, or at least in the last few years, would be a very good gift.
Because you had your Peyton Manning.
Who
was playing for Tennessee downstairs. That my parents were watching while I was upstairs watching.
They won a Super Bowl. Like, you know, that's a big deal.
Where are the Cowboys now? Are they not doing anything?
No idea.
Now I'm trying to be like...
Are you the most football-y person of the three of us?
In this room? Probably.
I guess so, which is sad, because I'm not that... they had, like, Tony Romo for a while. Like, they're competitive, but, like, I don't think they were really doing great. But they weren't... I'm trying to think of, like, who's the real... Like, who's like a worst in the league kind of football team? I just don't know enough about football.
Was that the Denver Broncos at the time? They were bad.
They were not good, in the 90s.
I mean, I probably had never heard of them before Peyton Manning went over there.
It also could just be a personal vendetta of the writer against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah,
because that last joke is, to me, one of the weaker parts of the episode. Maybe because I just don't get football.
Yeah.
But
honestly,
that's the last line of a really funny episode in March.
I grew up in New England, and, like, you know, the Patriots now, everyone hates them because they win so much. But, like, when I was a kid, they were terrible. I got made fun of in Rhode Island for wearing a Patriots hat in the late 80s because they were so bad.
Wait, who did people in Rhode Island, who did they like in Rhode Island? Were they the Cowboys?
Late 80s was, like, everybody loved the 49ers because, like, Joe Montana and stuff. Like, he was
A hot second, I had a whole bunch of football cards. Like, I was really little. My parents, of course, bought me all these football stuff.
Yeah,
so I had football cards that I would just, like, carry around with me everywhere. I remember that, and a lot of them were 49ers.
I also remember, like, in the 90s, I did not have a strong interest in basketball, but when I was in, like, a kid in the 80s, I had a Larry Bird sweatshirt and, like, a Larry Bird basketball, because, like, the Celtics were really good, and they were fun to watch, and then in the 90s, they were, like, pretty bad. So
there was a whole movie about how Celtic Pride?
Yeah.
That movie about how bad they were, and Celtics were, like, kidnap Larry Bird?
They kidnapped somebody. I never saw it.
I don't know.
Is it Daniel Stern?
I think it's like Daniel Stern and someone else. It's like maybe Damon Wayans? I don't know.
Maybe.
Let's do a minute-by-minute podcast.
Minute-by-minute on Celtic Pride.
That's the podcast universe I'm launching. But actually, the last joke in this episode is the Bond theme song.
Is this Scorpio song.
Oh, you're right.
Scorpio,
he'll sting you with his dreams of power and wealth. Beware of Scorpio. He's twisted twin obsessions are his plot to rule the world and his employees' health. He welcomes you into his lair like the nobleman welcomes his guest.
Which is a really good fake Bond villain song, and also still plays the game of Hank Scorpio.
Yeah. Right. Of that, beware his generous pensions.
He loves, like, on the Friday, on Fridays they have hot dogs and German beer. He loves German beer. It's a good joke.
It's a very, like, 1960s. Shirley Bassey. It's very, that, like, those
Goldfinger.
Yeah, that.
Right.
What's your favorite Bond song?
Oh, Goldfinger is so good.
I love Goldfinger, but I also really like You Only Live Twice.
Okay.
The inspiration for the title.
Right,
Oh, I mean, I don't know. In theory, I like Die Another Day.
Die Another Day is kind of fun.
I was actually just thinking about that.
Yeah, it's not bad. And then I like referencing Golden Eye. It's really funny to say.
Who sang Goldeneye?
Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah. Because I remember hearing that.
Goldeneye.
You know what might be my favorite, and it's kind of embarrassing? It's from, I think it's one of the Roger Moore ones, but Nobody Does It Better, the Carly Simon song.
Yeah,
I love that song.
Also,
Bond song, because it's not really, like, that epic, but...
I did not know that Jack White and Alicia Keys did the Quantum of Solace song.
Yeah.
Really?
Which was not a cultural thing at all, because it was years later, I was like, wait a second, they did a Bond song?
Is it good?
I haven't heard it.
Did Adele do Skyfall?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember Skyfall. That one being
that was a big
pretty
deal.
Good jam.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
It was a serious, yeah.
And what was the most recent one?
The most recent, it was Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall.
There's another one.
And then there was the most recent
Spectre.
One. Spectre. Oh, and that was Sam Smith, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I didn't listen to that.
Yeah.
And I also like that Sheryl Crow did Tomorrow Never Dies, and big into Sheryl Crow when that happened, so I have a soft spot for that. And then Garbage did The World Is Not Enough.
Recent resurgence of Sheryl Crow fandom.
Yeah,
do you want a fun Sheryl Crow?
Albums 2 and 3 are great.
Mm-hmm.
You want a fun Sheryl Crow fact?
Yeah, always.
That her big song,
Every Day's a Winding Road.
No,
if it makes you happy.
All I Want to Do.
Those are the
Strong
ones.
Enough, Can't Cry Anymore.
So All I Want to Do
my favorite
is like...
Mistake.
Favorite Mistake, that's my favorite one.
I like Favorite Mistake.
That's my, yeah.
All I Want to Do was like, I think her producer was like, oh, we need some more songs for the album, like, you know, like, and gave her like a book of poetry to like inspire her. And then she wrote All I Want to Do, but it shares so much of its structure with a poem that was in the book that this random poet...
Suit her?
No, they were just like, hey, we wrote a song, it uses some of your stuff, we're just going to credit you as a songwriter. And the poet's like, okay. And so that poet probably made like $100,000 just for not doing anything but inspiring the song All I Want to Do.
That's awesome. That's very nice of Sheryl Crow and her... legal
I also think the other thing was like that person would find out and be like, hey!
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure that poet is not sad about that situation.
I started listening to Sheryl Crow again because Mujan and I were watching the new season of The X-Files, and then we were like, let's listen to David Duchovny's equally awful new music.
Yes, yeah.
So we did, and it was bad but reminiscent of some Sheryl Crow that we much preferred. So
I love Every Day is a Winding Road. I will
go to
bed
for a good
song.
That's
a
solid song.
Like, yeah. I think that
So it's a adapted from the poem Fun by Wynn Cooper. He's best known for his 1987 poem Fun, which was adapted by Sheryl Crow and Bill Bottrell,
the
producer, into lyrics of All I Want to Do. And so he has like all these, he's still releasing poetry. Good for him.
He got to quit any job.
Yeah, he's living on money.
So like, Bottrell adapted Fun into the lyrics for her song when Crow could not come up with usable lyrics to the song, earning Cooper considerable royalties and helping to publicize his book, originally published as only around 500 copies in 1987, into multiple reprints.
Wow.
Good for him.
Absolutely.
Aww.
What a sweet story.
What a way to end the Simpsons portion of this. are you guys ready for some must-have facts about the episode?
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
Cool.
Woo! I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The ratings for this particular episode of Simpsons, 11.4 million people watched this episode.
Wow. So nothing gets ratings like that.
So the real question is, 11.4 million viewers, where do you think that ranked for the week?
Oh, man. There's no way that's number one, even though now that would be a hard...
So, like, what number?
15?
What do you say?
10.
50th.
Oh, you're kidding me!
50th for the week.
For 11 million people watching it?
Because, like, the number one show would have, like, 28, like,
what,
20...
What was the number?
So the top five shows of the week were... Number five was Friends.
Okay. Four, oh, 96, yeah.
Four, Suddenly Susan.
Suddenly Susan was number four?
It was probably... three was Home Improvement.
Sure.
Two was Seinfeld.
Yeah.
One was ER.
ER was so big in 96. Right.
The
yeah.
reason God, that Suddenly Susan was higher than Friends is most likely because it was couched between Seinfeld and ER.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was... It was.
So that's why it got the boost. And Friends was... They were confident enough from Friends to put it at the lead of must-see TV.
Okay.
So, like,
yeah.
people start on Friends.
Man, must-see TV. What an era, right?
Yeah, and Home Improvement squeaking in there at number three, like...
Yeah, wow.
It's a big show.
I don't watch Home Improvement. I like Home.
Yeah, that's the other show we did.
We, aww. Brett and I talked about
it. And since then, I have watched every episode.
Wow.
In January, I watched all 200 and like...
How does it stack up?
The yeah. first, honestly, like the first four or five seasons are so much better than I remember.
I know I stopped watching after like five or six seasons.
The embarrassing thing is that I was like, oh, I remember when I watched it until Mark went goth. So like, that was there were a couple seasons left. It's like, no, that is season 7 of 8. Like I watched... I oh, literally, I sat and I watched, I was a weekly, I did not realize I watched it for that long. but it holds up, like the first, your first 100 episodes of Home Improvement are actually probably one of the best family sitcoms ever.
I was going to say, I remember liking it
yeah,
a lot. Like when it went into reruns, I would rewatch it because it was, I was like, oh yeah,
stealthily super progressive and stealthily super
really?
Liberal.
Hmm.
Because it is... The entire show is about toxic masculinity
right.
literally blowing up in his face
right.
as, every single week.
As
yeah.
like a strong voice of reason from a woman who's an actual well-developed character.
Jill yeah. is a very well-developed
And then
character.
Also Alan Wilson being like these examples oh. of secure,
healthy.
Strong, healthy masculinity
yeah.
that is...
Doesn't need to prove itself.
That is also like valued within yeah. the context of the show. And then also the fact that his three sons also like...
Completely
don't
disavowed.
Totally take it. Like Randy does not take after him. He's the most
right.
hot. Yeah, it's an interesting
yeah.
it's an interesting
yeah.
watch, and it's a really good show.
Yeah.
So
watch that.
So on IMDb, 3,072 users gave this a 9.2 out of 10.
Hmm.
I mean,
did you go higher, or lower? Is that right on the money for
that? Feels
that sounds
right. That feels
right
to
yeah.
me.
It's not perfect, but it's pretty.
It's
damn
not a perfect
close.
Episode,
yeah.
but it's so funny.
Yeah.
And there's so many great gags in it. And, like, Hank Scorpio is such a fun character, and I'm glad that they never brought him back.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So they were originally, that's a trivia that's coming up next, is they were originally going to bring him back for the Simpsons movie.
Really?
But they created a new character instead.
Also as voiced by
yeah.
Albert Brooks.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Russ Cargill.
Yeah.
Like, he's sort of the villain in that movie.
Right.
I would have been okay with them bringing him back
for the
movie.
That might be.
That would have been the yeah. only situation where I would have been okay with
what
it.
What is the movie's reputation?
The movie's... I, as a Simpsons fan, I'm like, it's just okay.
Yeah, I don't even really remember it.
I mean, I'm sure... How does it compare to, like, what Simpsons was doing on TV at that point concurrently?
I guess
thing
it's,
is, like,
it's,
most...
it's probably about the same as where the show was
okay,
at that point.
Like,
I had stopped watching the show at that point.
That's the other insane thing to me about the Simpsons. It's usually, like, with a TV show, it's like, I love Cheers. I have seen every episode of Cheers, mm-hmm. and I can vouch for it, like, starting strong and ending strong. Golden Girls, same. Friends, right. gets really bad at the end, but, like, I've seen every episode multiple. The fact that there are people who, like, Simpsons is their life, like, they love The Simpsons, it's their favorite show, and they have not seen two-thirds of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is,
like, really after, weird.
Insane.
After season, like, 13, I don't know that I've seen more than, like, 10 episodes.
Yeah, I haven't seen a new episode of The Simpsons since I was a teenager.
But you still, like, love the show.
But I love
Oh, man.
And it's like, yeah, that it's so fascinating.
It's a completely different show now,
it totally redefines how you define your favorite thing. Because I'm very much like, I will not wear a band t-shirt unless I love two of their albums. Like, I'm like, I need to be able to, like, know my shit and back my shit up.
I'm wearing right now a Ted Leo and the Pharmacists t-shirt, which is a band that was like, I know that catalog pretty well.
Yeah, so if anyone's like, hey, name album number two, you're like, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it?
Oh, Tyranny of Distance.
Okay.
technically, that's like his first album as the Pharmacist, but there was like a minimally released album before that.
See?
But
I'm
like,
not going to question you owning that shirt.
That's fandom.
But it is weird. Like, you can say, like, I love The Simpsons, and I loved 13 years of it, and I haven't seen 20 more.
Yeah.
Like,
they just shouldn't have made 20 more. Don't
like
you and I
kind
of feel similarly about The X-Files?
Oh, yeah, because that is thing. Like, I have not seen most of the last two seasons.
Yeah.
I've seen a handful. I've seen Butt.
Right.
Everyone go watch Bad Luck.
Everybody.
Episode that has a butt demon from India coming over and then possessing people through their butts.
In New Jersey. That is the only place where something like that would happen.
I have also seen like 10 X-Files episodes, and one of them is that episode.
Because we watched it in my place.
Yeah.
And see, I'm also the same way with Mystery Science Theater. It's like, I count Mystery Science Theater as being like a formative show of my sense of humor.
It's very
but
important.
I only know the Mike years because I did not have Comedy Central as a child. I had Sci-Fi, and so I only discovered it when Mike came along.
Some of those Joel episodes are so good.
Yeah.
And it's also like every episode that is 2 hours long, so I'm not gonna go back and watch all this so much
Mystery
content.
Mystery Science Theater is like great for a sick day.
Yeah.
Great for when you're just like laid out.
Or like when you don't have any friends in middle school. And, oh, wait, what?
Equally good.
Because that's what I would do every weekend is watch Mystery Science Theater all the time.
Yeah.
So who would you say had the must-see performance in this episode?
Oh, it's Albert Brooks.
Hank
Scorpio
is
such a home run of a character from start to finish.
Yeah.
Like, literally every time he shows up in the episode, I was like, oh, this is one of my other favorite bits, you know? Of just like, even just that bit where he's like, Homer, why don't you hang up my jacket on the wall? Like, we don't have walls. In fact, I didn't even give you my jacket.
And then he's wearing his jacket backwards.
His own jacket backwards.
That's great.
Yeah. Such a good visual gag.
And
it's
remarkable about his performance as that character is he's not annoying. You know, that archetype, that like way too eager boss who wants to be your friend is usually like a scummy
a Michael Scott
sort of douchebag.
Like, David Brent.
But
this guy
he's so magnetic. Mm-hmm. He's like
you actually
absolutely lovable.
You want to hang out with him and go bowling.
And you want him to kill the United Nations.
Yeah.
Like you're kind of rooting for him.
Italy or France.
That's up. They never say Italy.
So are there also different, because I remember when I was a kid, everyone was really into Bart. Like, Bart was the breakout character.
Right.
But then I feel like as I got to high school and, like, older, everyone was into Homer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there different phases of, like, this is a good, like, Lisa season?
Well,
this is a good...
Oh, there's definitely episodes that are, like...
I almost said that my favorite episode is the episode where Lisa starts hanging out with a smarter girl.
Oh, that is
that
a great
That is an
episode.
Excellent
that
episode.
That is a terrific episode.
And she goes to her family's house and they play this game.
They're like, we play a game where we
make
try to rearrange the name, make an anagram out of a celebrity's name into a description of them.
Right, which is practically impossible.
And so her dad gives the smart girl, who I think his name is Allison.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's like, Alec Guinness. And she's like, oh, genuine class. He's like, oh, very good. Lisa.
Jeremy Irons. And
she's
goes,
like,
Jeremy's
iron? All right, Lisa, well, I have this ball.
Why don't you...
Perhaps you'd like to bounce it.
Right.
and
it's
then she messes
episode.
Up bouncing
right,
the
she
ball.
She can't even bounce the ball.
It's really good.
It's a great episode. But it's also, in the end, sort of about, like, female solidarity a little. Like, instead of... she decides to sabotage her in this, like, science fair project or something.
In Diorama-rama.
Diorama-rama. Right. And then in the end, she's like, you know what? This was bullshit. We're both really smart young women, and
like, why can't we
be
both
friends.
Be smart? Yeah.
And they should be friends.
And they should be friends.
Was that episode written by a man?
Awesome.
Were they all written by men?
Ooh, probably.
So the Simpsons? Yeah. Overwhelmingly, I'm sure.
Yeah, but that's a good message. I'm glad that message.
That's a rare episode, I would say, of The Simpsons. Because, I mean, especially Marge, there are so many episodes where she could just... She just gets screwed. The whole show is like that's kind of the weakest part of the show.
Earlier on there were a lot more pro Marge episodes.
Yeah, but it always ends with her being like, the most important thing to me is my family, which is good and makes sense, but she never gets to claim anything for herself at the end, you know? Like, she always, maybe she's going to be a bowler, maybe she's going to get a job, maybe she's going to do this, but it always ends with her being like, no, I'm going to sacrifice everything and not even keep a little thing to keep me happy.
And that's the interesting thing about it being an animated show is like, well, Marge can't get a job because then we have to like animate
her
all
outfit.
Of the, we have to like change up. We have to animate all these different.
But whereas, like, if multiple it's a episodes
where
Marge
does get
gets a job.
Although
they
always
just never keeps them.
The episode where Marge becomes a cop is a great episode.
Yes, that's really good.
Is it really more?
And she looks so hot.
Is
she
it more expensive to like? So like, I'm Roseanne. She goes through a lot of jobs. Like when she moves to like the fucking like diner that she co-owns. Like, is it more expensive to build a physical set that you use or to paint new like animation backgrounds and cells?
That's a great question.
Because it isn't like why if they are equal in cost, then why wouldn't they just be like, oh, let's give Marge a job and enter in all these
when Marge like becomes a cop, it's like they probably have the police station.
Yeah.
But now they have to make model sheets for Marge as a police officer. And all the animators have to learn. It's like, okay, well, when Marge is a police officer, where does her hat sit on her head? And like when she turns, is it like, and it's like, that becomes such a big concern in animation.
Yeah. And it's not like they don't have to like reanimate Roseanne. Like, must other people see this episode?
Oh, if you're a Simpsons fan, you haven't seen this episode.
It's an absolute delight.
What the?
You should see it.
And I think even if you're a casual Simpsons enjoyer, it's a great episode.
I'm glad. And also James Bond.
Yeah. If you're a James Bond fan, you should watch it.
If you're a Bond fan, it's also a fun episode,
Yeah, I'm glad that I got to see it. So let's move on to the last segment of the episode from the great TV sitcom book. This is a book published in 1983 that has little capsule entries of sitcoms from 1949 to 1983, including ones that only lasted a few episodes or a couple seasons that we will never talk about on the show, but we can talk about right here.
Please.
It was written by Rick Mitz, and he has a little sassy personality, just in case that shines through in his writing. So I'm going to flip through the book, and then tell me when to stop, and then we'll find the closest capsule page to that.
Okay.
So...
Stop.
Okay, so we're on the 65-66 season. Let's go. Okay, so do you want to hear about... Oh, there are actual, like, shows we're going to do on this podcast at some point. So that's weird.
So give us one you're not going
to
do.
The double... So the ones that I want to do at some point that are big are F Troop, Green Acres, and Hogan's Heroes are on this page. Which is like...
Those are famous shows.
We've done Green Acres on this show. So The Double Life of Henry Fife.
What a great title.
Gidget or Hank?
Oh, Gidget.
So which one of those three do you want to hear about?
I got to know about the double life of Henry
Fife. Yeah, I need to know what happens in those lives.
So The Double Life of Henry Fife, 1965 to 66 TV season. Mild-mannered Henry Wadsworth Fife, played by Red Buttons.
Red Buttons!
Never asked to lead the thrilling, dangerous, important life of an international spy for Central Intelligence. In fact, he was perfectly happy as an accountant. But when Agent U-31 died in a hit-and-run accident before he could reveal his vital secrets, Sub-Chief Gerald B. Hanahan, Fred Clark, found out that only one man could take his place. Henry turned out to be U-31's exact double, so when the call from Washington arrived, he reluctantly stumbled into the dead spy's identity and his job. As things worked out, Henry was right to have resisted the Sub-Chief's orders. ABC released him from active duty after only one season, leaving the forces of democracy much better off.
Okay. Ouch.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's got a little sauce. The Double Life of Henry Fife is just that's a movie, right?
He's a doppelganger?
He looks like a spy dies. He looks just like the spy, then he becomes a spy.
Okay.
That is more or less the plot of the movie Kagemusha by Kurosawa, meaning Shadow Warrior, where a daimyo is dying. But his sort of like second in command are like, if other clans know that our daimyo is dying, they're going to invade us and kill us.
Mm.
And they find this bandit A double role played by Toshiro Mifune. It's not Mifune, because this is like 80s Kurosawa. He would have been too old. Yeah. It's the guy he used in, I'm not going to be able to think of his name, but he plays the lead in Ron also. He is like a bandit, but he looks exactly like the daimyo, and so they train him to stand in for that guy, and they sort of manage to like survive this era of instability, and then like, but it's like kind of the same plot line.
So do you think Double F Henry V is based off that?
Well, Kagamusha is like late period.
With red buttons.
That's like 1980, so
too late. Maybe Kagamusha is based on the Double F Henry V.
Yeah.
Can we get red buttons for this?
Damn it. Well, I guess we'll have to make do with Toshiro Mifune.
I know red buttons from, did you see that movie, they shoot horses, don't they?
I learned about it and I read about it because it sounds insane. Like, it's about a dance contest that goes wrong.
Yeah. Oh.
It's just like a dance contest.
It's a Depression era, like, dance marathon that, like, you know, it's Depression era. So everyone's, like, in it just because, like,
you get a little bit of money.
Well, you get fed. Oh. And, like, that's why people are in it. And Red Buttons is, like, this old guy who's like, I can go longer than any of it. And I think he was nominated for an Academy Award for that because he's really good
at it. That's just, like, the name of it. Like, they shoot injured horses, don't they?
Well, this is a real spoiler alert for They Shoot Horses, Don't They? So if you're going to watch it...
I'm never going to watch a movie called They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
At the end of the movie, Jane Fonda is in the movie.
Yes.
And he shoots Jane Fonda and kills her because she's like... They've been in this dance marathon for like 5 days and are like literally dying.
Yeah.
And so he shoots her and they ask him, like, why'd you do it? And the last line of the movie is like, shoot horses, don't they? Yeah. And then he gets like dragged off to jail.
But what is that? That's not an explanation.
It's more about the fact that like,
it's a,
during the Depression, it's just like,
it was bad.
People's lives were just forfeit, you know? Yeah. It was just like, we were just wasting the human potential of hundreds of people because we couldn't feed people.
Mm.
And it's like, rather than watch her suffer for years and years and years, and she was like tortured and miserable, I shot her.
Yeah.
And it's like,
well, thank you. Thanks for the favor of
ending her life.
It's a good movie.
He did that after Double F Henry V. It's a little...
It's a solid movie, but it is very depressing.
We'll never talk about that show on this show.
Double Life of Henry V? Yeah.
Lost in the Sands of Time. Mm. It just sounds like Get Smart, which is also from that
year. Yeah, it's like Get Smart, but probably not as good.
No.
Right.
Which I want to do Get Smart at some point.
Oh, man. Great show.
Where can people find y'all online if they want to talk about the Simpies? Does anyone ever call it the Simpies?
Yeah, the Simpies.
The Simpies.
Oh, please, no.
Be found on Twitter and Instagram at Jeremy M. Bent. I'm there all the time. And of course, you can check out my podcast, Mission to Zix.
Yes.
Starting up season 2 on May 30th, where I play the mildly disgruntled protocol droid C-53.
And I'm a little bit of a ghost on the internet. I am on Twitter at Diana McCorry. And Instagram on, I think it's Dianosaurus Rose.
Yeah.
And I have a show coming out on Facebook later this year called Human Kind Of that should be good.
Yeah. So
it's about a teenage girl who finds out her dad was an alien.
Exciting.
It'll be a little, it's animated, so it'll be a little Simpsons-esque, I'm sure.
All the Simpy fans will love it.
Yeah, the Simpy fans will.
All the Simpy heads are going to be up in
All the simpletons.
These are not terms.
What
are
they? I don't think they do
they
that.
Don't use these terms? These are all gold. These are all great.
Simpsons fans.
Simpsons fans? Yeah. Simpos.
I think it was maybe before people had cute terms for
specific
being a fan
fandoms.
Of something
Simperfines.
Simper. Ooh.
You're really stretching the pun on that one.
Yeah.
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Jeremy Bent and Diana McCoy, for dropping by and talking about The Simpsons with me. Next week, I'll be discussing another forgotten show from the 80s. This time, it is the show It's Your Move, starring a very young Jason Bateman. We will be discussing the It's Your Move episode Pajama Party, and Pajama Party is in Season 1, and it is Episode 5, and you can watch It's Your Move on YouTube. I'll be tweeting out a link to that video, so if you want to watch it, like us on Facebook, or Twitter, and you will get a link to that episode there. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Tweet your questions about sitcoms to @MustHaveSeenTV or send them to MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr @MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, or if you would like to request a episode of television for us to watch, please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in iTunes and let me know what you want me to watch there. It just needs to be a show or an episode that we haven't done yet, and let me know in that review. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram @BrettWhite. Read the words that I write at Decider.com. Our theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening. And I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.